Hiya, sport! What can I get for you?
I'm Adam Jensen, head of security at Seraph Industries. I'm looking for someone.
Ah, well, can I get you a drink, Mr. Jensen? Maybe something to relax that tummy?
I'm looking for an illegal arms dealer.
Okay. Now, do you mean arms like robotic arms or guns?
Wait, like these guns?
Okay, it's actually pretty dark in here, but it just looks like you're flutching at me.
That's exactly what I'm doing. Check out these guns.
Again, I'm not sure if you're saying that in reference to your robotic guns or your robotic biceps, but I am checking them both out, and I am impressed on both counts.
Do you or do you not know an illegal arms dealer?
Whoa, you still haven't explained what kind of arms you're talking about, Adam. Look, let me pour you a white wine spritzer, okay?
That sounds lovely.
There we go. Full to the brim. Girlish glee.
Whoop, better sip a little bit off the top.
Okay, hold on a second, Paul. I'm confused at this point. Because in the script, your stage direction says, we hear Adam roughing up the bartender with his arms.
Yeah, I don't see how I could have made it clearer.
Well, you just haven't specified what kind of arms.
Yeah, that's a good point, but I think it's up to the listener to decide what kind of arms I'm talking about.
Well, okay, but now the listener has to decide whether or not Adam Jensen...
Yeah.
If he's grabbed the bartender with his guns.
Uh-huh.
And these may or may not be... actual guns that just have hands on them. Is that the implication?
That's, yeah, well, I am reading back this whole thing, and I think there's only really one real implication here.
Now, what's that?
Well, that's that I clearly wrote this while spectacularly drunk. I'm very sorry. No,
come on, hold on a second. I mean, don't put yourself down. I mean, it's pretty good. Let's just keep going and see where it goes.
Do you want to keep going?
Yeah, let's just keep going.
All right, here we go.
Give me a name.
Oh, no. You've grabbed me with your guns, which have hands on them.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, you were drunk.
You can't get drunk on rubbing alcohol, Chris. That's an urban legend, damn it.
Did you drink rubbing alcohol?
And how?
Welcome to 28 Plays Later. I'm Chris Straub.
I'm Paul Verhoeven.
We play games. We talk about them. Hey, Paul, how was your week?
It was pretty good, actually. I have spent the better part of the week, I know this isn't gaming related, but I've spent most of the week catching up on the new Star Wars comics, because, as you know, they laid waste to the entire EU, which is the Expanded Universe, which is, you know, about 15, 20 years of books and comics and games and whatnot, and I was very bitter, and so I thought I would have a read of the new comics, which effectively are the start of the new Expanded Universe of Star Wars, because I'm a very big Star Wars fan, and they're really good. They're very, very good. So I've been reading the Star Wars line, I've been reading Vader, and I've been reading the Princess Leia comics, and I'm thoroughly enjoying them. There is nothing funny or insightful about that. It's just, it's been devouring my entire week.
What if I just pretended it was funny and insightful?
Okay.
So is there anything in there about episode 7? Is there any like lead-in stuff?
Are we
not at that point yet?
We're not at that point yet. Because at this point, they're all set between A New Hope and The Empire Strikes Back. And that's a really dangerous thing to do, because it's kind of like going back through your family history and finding out that the grandpa you loved was a Nazi sympathizer. Okay, it's not... on any level like that at all.
That was very difficult for me. Don't bring that up.
That was very difficult. I'm sorry. it is effectively like finding out just hidden stories from like nestled between the films. If you recall, I think the first Star Wars novel was Splinter of the Mind's Eye, which sort of just jammed new mythology in. Like it had Leia and Luke meeting Vader in some encounter on like a swamp planet or whatever.
Oh, right.
Yeah, the point is, this is all trying to bridge A New Hope and The Empire Strikes Back. It's trying to explain how Luke and the Rebels got to Hoth. It's trying to it's trying to fill in the gaps, and it's doing so very, very well so far. I don't want to spoil anything, but all three titles sort of tie into each other, and later on they'll be doing a Lando Calrissian standalone miniseries.
Oh, that's right. I saw the cover for that one.
Yeah.
A delight.
Go ahead. No, I was going
to
say, did you see Billy Dee Williams' cripplingly awkward Q&A over at the Star Wars Celebration?
No, I did not. The only one I had read about was Carrie Fisher's Q&A, where she was drunk, apparently, and having a great old time. I guess she made out with a fan on stage.
I heard that. Yeah, lucky guy. Or girl.
It was a real deal thing. No, it was a guy. Oh. Cool guy. He was wearing a sleeveless sort of a jersey.
Yeah.
And
wait, how is that relevant?
Because it's relevant for the fiction that I write every night.
It's for your slash. If I'm going to deposit this firmly within my spank bank, I need to have every single piece of clothing. I need the lighting cues.
I want to know the feel of the texture of the cloth. That's exactly what I need. What kind of, was it a true jersey or was it that kind of basketball mesh? That's what I'm after.
The finest satin.
Oh, it was just a converted, it was just a bed sheet with holes in it. Yeah, that's about what he was wearing.
Just a garbage bag with bits cut out of it, you know.
Anyway, I did not see Billy Dee Williams at this event.
You don't need to. It's horrible. Last time I encountered Billy Dee Williams was actually inside a Star Wars game. Because if you played Jedi Outcast, there's a point where Kyle Katarn meets up with Lando, and it's actually voiced by Billy Dee Williams, and the two of you get to go off on his ship. What is his ship called?
The Lando Calrissian. No, that's not it.
Oh, that's great. And who could forget when Han Solo flew off with Chewie in the Han Lando Solo?
That's right. That's a new rule for the new trilogy is that when you take over a ship, you just name it your name for the ease of referral.
Actually, you can flip it the other way too. So remember when Princess Leia was swooning and she kissed the Millennium Falcon in the Millennium Falcon?
Oh, it was a beautiful moment. Mm. I hope they have more like that in the coming movies.
Yeah, objectum sexual. You know when a person is falling in love with an inanimate object? There was a woman who married a bridge, apparently. I'm just trying to... Anyway, look, we're getting vastly...
Speaking of bridges, let's bridge back to the...
Let's get back to the main topic. Okay, so if you follow us on Twitter, first of all, thank you. But secondly, you will notice that we sort of spruced this episode as being a Deus Ex special. Because, look, you and I, Deus Ex, the first Deus Ex, is one of the, I would say, one of the best games ever made. It's up there with Half-Life.
I would agree with that. I have fond memories of this game.
Okay, so when you think back to Deus Ex, the first Deus Ex, what is your, what's the moment in the game where you sort of went, okay, this is amazing? Like, what was the watershed moment for you in the first Deus Ex?
This one goes deep. At least I think it does. It sure changed my mind about some things. There are a lot of moments like that. But the one that turned my head completely was you are speaking with, I don't remember the name of the AI now. Was it Echelon? Or was it one of the later ones like Icarus? I don't remember.
Maybe it might be Icarus. Maybe I'm
Icarus.
Not sure.
It sounds. I know one of them was like a rogue AI that merged with it at the end or whatever. But it was whichever one of the early iterations of the AI. I think Echelon was just a pattern matching piece of software that
It was basically Shazam.
Yeah, it was. It was just searching. It monitored all phone calls and found out what song you were singing and whether or not it should put you in jail. But you're speaking to the AI and the AI is saying, you're talking to it about religion and the AI tells you, I used to know the quote by heart, but it was, people have a need to be observed. That's why you invented God. Hmm. And there's no longer a need for, religion. It can be simulated using data mining algorithms. And I remember thinking the idea that humans created the idea of religion because we need to be observed because it's the only thing that keeps us in a gregarious society, you know, and the idea that faith is not and religion are not actually real things, but they are, higher order inventions of a mind that has evolved to feel guilt only for the purpose of having law, having order in a society. Yeah. You know what I mean? Ants don't feel guilt. Ants have no internal drive of their own that's like, I'm going to eat that sugar. The hell with the rest of these guys. Mm-hmm. But we are more complicated. So we have developed that angry sky man who looks down upon us and says, you better not take that sugar. And I don't. Every day I don't take it. So that like threw me into such a... The writing was incredible. Like it, that specific interaction in the game. Do you remember it was around that time, I want to say, that Roger Ebert, the critic, had leveled his offered the opinion that he did not feel that video games could be art.
Yes.
And that specific moment in the game, I wish I could have shown him that. I wish I could have refuted that But he, you know, I mean, and do you remember the trial that went underway? The games that they chose, and I don't remember what court, what American court it was. It was like in Illinois or something. Mm. But they were trying to determine whether or not video games could be considered art. And the games they chose were like Tetris. And they're like, well, there's no story in here, so this is garbage.
That's like trying to gauge whether architecture is art by looking at sheds. Like, there's no...
Yes.
You know,
exactly.
You've taken function over artistry. But like that thing about being observed and about kind of creating like a moral framework based on the fact that you're being watched by a higher power. There was actually a French philosopher, I can't remember his name, who invented the idea of the panopticon. Are you familiar with the panopticon?
Oh, yes. I remember that from Silent Hill 4.
Oh, good. It's depressing how much of my pop culture knowledge comes from The Simpsons, Blackadder, and video games. But it was an English philosopher, Bentham. And basically, he created this prison in which it's sort of a circular structure, and there's cells on the insides of the walls of the structure dotted up and down the inside. Think of like a tube. And inside the middle of the tube is a featureless kind of building, which has in it an observer. Now, the people in the cells don't ever know whether they're being watched, but they know that someone is there at all times and that they might be observed. And so they sort of change their behavior based on the assumption that they're always being observed. It's the exact premise upon which the show Big Brother is based. You know you're being filmed, so you always behave in a certain way. And then after a while, there's always that interesting tipping point in Big Brother where the people stop acting like they're being filmed a few weeks in. They just wake up one day and it's sort of just they've worked it into who they are as a person.
Well, it's exhausting.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've done a lot more acting than I have. You've done it. Don't be coy. There's something about behaving in front of a camera and then coming off of it and then realizing how much energy I've expended in being this other thing.
Yeah.
And I would come away from, 4 hours of that. It's not a lot of work. I'm just talking and I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
And right after it turns off, I'm so tired. Anyway, yeah, it changes a person to be watched. That was one of my favorite themes in Silent Hill 4, to tie it back into games that are not Deus Ex. There was a lot of discussion of the idea of being watched, the horror of being watched, and only being able to watch. We should talk about Silent Hill for one of these. I got a lot to say about that.
We'll do a Silent Hill one.
But anyway, Deus Ex was the moment for me. What's your moment?
Oh, God. Okay, so J.C. Denton, who was the hero of Deus Ex, has a brother, Paul.
Was it just the same name? That's all it did for you?
Honestly, that really spoke to me because I've always felt that Paul is a bit of a monosyllabic little fart of a name. I've never really resonated with my name.
Paul.
But here's the thing. There was a point in the game where you are kind of talking with Paul and he mentions that the hotel that you're staying in, he's there and they've been overrun by bad guys, and he tells you to get out of the city. And the quest marker tells you to get out of the city. And I was playing this game in my, I think, early teens. I was 13 or 14 when I was playing this game. And it occurred to me, because I'd suddenly gotten so attached to these characters, and I was really enjoying the fact that Paul was actually telling me to rebel against the organization that I'm working for. And so I thought, oh, fuck it. So I ran back to the hotel, climbed the fire exit and went in there, and rather than it just being like a scripted, okay, he's dead, sure enough, he was being swamped by guards and he called for my help. Now, this wasn't in any way incentivized or advertised by the game. This was just something the game creators had put in there on the basis that maybe we would be attached enough to go and try and help him. And I fought the guards off and he thanked me. And for the rest of the game, he's alive. Like, he keeps, getting in touch with you. And many years later, I found out that, sure enough, if he dies, that's it. He's gone. He's gone from the story. They created this sort of branch in the plot, and it felt like the very first moment I've ever taken a game and grabbed the reins and taken control of the plot myself. It was the first time I ever felt like I'd gone off the rails or off the beaten path in a video game. Which is not something that I felt again for a very long time, because as much as I love games like Half-Life, which was again such a like a definitive game in and growing up or whatever, I'm a big fan of games that give you legitimate moral choices that aren't advertised. The thing about games like Fallout or, Mass Effect is that there is a big kind of good, evil, good karma, bad karma signpost. But in Deus Ex, it was just sort of, look, if you want to go back and rescue him, that's fine. It felt like I'd taken initiative,
Yeah, this story reminded me of my interaction with that moment in the game, and I did go back and save him because I have a brother. Right. And I remember feeling very, you know, particular about JC and Paul's relationship, where I'm like, no, I have to protect him. I got to go back for him. Although I think Paul is his older brother.
He is the older
brother. If I remember right. Yeah, but like I was still like, I see my brother in that building, and I'm like, no, I got to go back for him. It doesn't matter. I gotta go help him.
Well, because something about their relationship really resonated, because at the start of the game, you are part of like a covert, pretty full-on military organization. And when you're heading in, Paul asks you to come and talk to him, which, you don't have to do. And you go up and chat with him, and he tells you that maybe you don't need to grab the machine gun or the RPG. And so he gives you the option of taking in the non-lethal. I'd never played like a non-lethal takedown game at that point. Again, this game was groundbreaking in so many ways. And so because he'd kind of been coaching me from my previous first-person shooter habits through to a new paradigm, I'm wandering through this game, playing it in the style of this brother character. So when it came time for him to tell me to run, I was like, well, no, he's like my mentor. He's the guy I've been playing this game for. He's the character I'm looking up to. He's literally the big brother that you don't want to let down in the game. So it seemed counterintuitive to me to let him die. And so, by the way, it just occurred to me, is this spoilery? I don't think it is. I think the game's like 20 years old.
I don't think so. Yeah, it's pretty old. It's so old that in how old was it, Chris? In preparation for this podcast, I bought it again on Steam, the Game of the Year edition. It's like $7.
Yeah.
And I cannot run it because my machine is too fast.
Oh no!
I have to turn it. I have to put it on software rendering, which I haven't seen forever. And even then, like the graphics are kind of glitched out. But at least it's playably slow.
Hey, you know what? it does work on. It's on GOG. If you go to GOG.com, you can actually download. Because Steam doesn't optimize a lot of those old games. Because after our last episode, the Star Wars episode, I went, okay, every couple of years, I sit down and I play the entire Dark Forces series back to front. And it's been quite a few iterations of Windows since I did that. So I bought them all on Steam. And sure enough, they just did not work. So after a couple of days of trying to run them in emulators and try and boot up old computers to do it, I just went to GOG and downloaded them, and sure enough, they run beautifully. So go to GOG and grab Deus Ex. It's probably cheaper than the Steam one, and it will work.
Oh, interesting. Okay. That makes sense. Sorry, I'm going a little Adam Jensen.
just quickly, speaking of Adam Jensen, I am I won't say friends, but I'm a loose acquaintance of Elias Tefexis, who is the voice actor of Adam Jensen from Deus Ex Human Revolution and the upcoming one, which I think is called Mankind Divided. I'm very excited about that. But about this time last year, I was going through a massive Deus Ex renaissance, because again, it's one of those games, like movies or books, that I sort of revisit on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And I contacted Elias and asked him if he would record a custom-made voicemail message for me. But I asked him to do it in character as Adam Jensen. So, would you like to hear it?
I would like to hear it. Let's hear it.
Okay.
You've reached the voicemail of Paul Verhoeven. Paul's not here at the moment because I, Adam Jensen, accidentally kidney-punched him for asking me to take my glasses off over and over again. So, legally, I'm bound to do this message. I never asked for this. Anyway, leave me a message. I'm sure he'll wake up. Eventually.
That is awesome.
It's pretty good, right?
That is amazing.
Yeah.
How did you meet him?
We just started chatting on Twitter when the game came out. I was just very active. I'm kind of active on Twitter, and we just sort of started chatting and riffing. Plus, I was sort of a loose fan of his work anyway, because he played this really awesome character in Supernatural, because I'm a bit of a Supernatural fanboy. I know. I don't care.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Sammy!
He's a really cool guy, and I think he's going to come and chat with us at some point in the future, hopefully, when we do a bit of a feature on the next Deus Ex game. So, you know, keep your ears peeled for that. He's a really cool guy. You can follow him on Twitter at Elias Tefexis. Bloody lovely guy. Absolute gentleman. Also, I was playing, I think, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, potentially, and I was running around the streets of whatever Renaissance era city that I was in. And
doesn't matter. They're all the same.
They're all crap.
Who cares?
Yeah, who cares? And there was some like minor quest giver, and it was him. It was Adam Jensen's voice. And I think I tweeted. Yeah. And then I heard another guy, another random Italian dude, and it was Garrus Vakarian from goddamn Mass Effect.
Huh.
Yeah, it was sort of a who's who of voice actors I like. So anyway, that's interesting.
Now that you're listening for that kind of stuff, it just breaks immersion. There's just no way to go back.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, that's okay. Impossible. So we were talking about the first Deus Ex, and we were talking, frankly, in a very dull manner about how to get it running on a new computer. But what other prevailing memories do you have of playing the first Deus Ex game?
Well, you mentioned never having played the non-lethal before. Yeah. When did Thief come out? Hold on a second. I'm going to do my own little... I should have prepared before, since I knew I was going to talk about it.
That's all right. Just Google it. I'm kind of ashamed to say I've never played a Thief game, except when they sent me a press copy of the new one, which was after playing the very excellent Dishonored game and its really wonderful expansions. It was sort of a bummer. I didn't really like it, but I've heard nothing but good things about the first couple of Thief games.
The first Thief game was I loved it, and then it progressively seemed to lose its way the further we went. And then it was the third one where there was a lot of complaint that it was going to get dumbed down because it was being offered as a console as well as a PC,
sure.
And it was going to third person perspective instead of first. And I was one of the people who did not like these changes, and I did not enjoy C3. It also just felt smaller in an odd way. It came out around this. We could talk about Deus Ex 2 or Invisible War as well.
God, yes, yes.
But I associate the two of those styles. It's sort of like it was back when they were just discovering ragdoll physics.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, and it was a kind of a rough lie for a little while because you'd shoot a guy and he's in his stance. He's like, he's ready to fight you, and you'd shoot him and the ragdoll would take over and then he would just drop straight down there's no force acting on him other than gravity. And he just would turn into a pile of sausages.
Yeah, it was
that
like
you
someone
could kick around.
It was now there's an image. Also, it will get you kicked out of most good butcher shops, but it was, I remember it. It was sort of like you just cut their invisible puppet strings and they sort of untethered. Yeah, really haunting and totally breaking
very
the immersion. Yeah,
odd, yeah. Anyway, but we're talking about Deus Ex. So the thing about that was that Thief had come out in 1998, mm-hmm. and Deus Ex came out in 2000. I really appreciated the stealth gameplay of Thief, and I was so thrilled to discover Deus Ex is one of the only games where I felt like any gameplay approach you wanted to take worked. Mm. It wasn't like you can play it stealth if you want. You're not going to get anywhere. It's not going to work. But you can if you want to try. No, I felt that stealth was equally good as dead on, like coming in the front door.
Yeah,
I played most of that game in a stealthy way with silenced weapons or non-lethal.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated that. I thought it was super, super well done. I think I must have played through it multiple times and tried multiple things. And I think that was the thing that showed me how robust and how rich that gameplay was.
Well, it does kind of make you feel very freed, in terms of wandering around the game world. You don't feel like – you don't see the strings. You don't see the rails that you're traveling on. There was actually a point where I was playing stealthy until I got to Hong Kong and you have to actually steal that sword. Remember that like laser sword that you have to steal?
Yeah, yeah.
So once I got that, I swear to God, I played the whole game as a Jedi basically. I was just running around slamming dudes with my laser sword. And one of my favorite things about that game was the mission where you had to break back into your old headquarters. Do you remember?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so you have to break back in and it just felt like going back to high school as an adult and beating up the childhood bullies that were giving you trouble back when you were a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
Except this time I had a laser sword and I was able to cloak and go invisible and I could jump really high. That was my favorite augment. Being able to jump up onto the fire escape to go and rescue my brother was just... It felt very much like The Matrix. It felt very... It was a very pure kind of gaming experience. And
yeah.
I really do think that Invisible War sort of lost the plot a little bit. I mean, it was set... Because the end of Deus Ex did have a bunch of, push the button, pick a binary ending.
Right. Yeah, yeah, there were three endings.
So it was merged with... was it Helios? No, Helios is something else, isn't it?
No, Helios, one of the AIs, like two AIs merged together became Helios.
Yep.
And Helios's goal was to permit everybody to be...
In the cloud, basically.
Yeah, everybody was in the cloud and all decisions would be made. Like voting would happen instantaneously. Another fascinating idea, I thought.
Yeah.
Rather than having an election day, just a question would be presented to you and you would think, oh, nah, I like that. And then that would be the vote that day.
Yeah.
I think that's super interesting. So that was one. Number two was, I believe, Tracer Tong's preferred goal.
Oh, that was the one where it was like just turn everything off, reset
turn
all
off,
technology.
Wreck all satellites and we go back to the Stone Age, but a peaceful one, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
And then what was the other one? It must have been the Illuminati where they – I don't know why would you choose that one?
That was the one nobody picked. Nobody picked that. People either picked the merge with Helios or reset everything. And when you press the reset everything option, Tong's like, oh, shit, and everything starts collapsing. He's like, I'll see you in the forest because that's all we'll have in 10 years. And then when you get to Invisible War, you are effectively – I think you're at like the Augmented Soldier Academy or whatever. And they sort of – jammed all three options together. So the Illuminati were in power. About half of the world's technology had been reset, and JC had been fused with Helios partially. So he was kind of godlike, but kind of, I think his body was shutting down because it couldn't cope with the technological strain. So you actually ended up confronting JC Denton and his brother. And I think you had two options. You had one option of going with him and helping him basically destroy the planet because he turned into a bad guy at that point, if I recall correctly. Or you could kill the character that you'd grown to love playing the first game, both of which options were like horribly unpalatable.
No, so, I don't. I love you, JC.
Yeah. Oh, that's
I love it. That's not what you said, Chris. You said you, not it. No, I said I love the game. Yeah. No, I have... So we were talking about Deus Ex to do a show about it, and you were you had mentioned Alex Jensen or Adam Jensen.
Yeah,
Alex was the name of the Invisible War guy, right?
I think so. Yeah,
Alex D. That's right. And he's like, I think it's Denton. But I had fond memories of J.C. Denton's voice acting. A lot of the voice acting in Deus Ex is hard to go back to and listen to. Mm. And you had said no, J.C. Denton was a silent protagonist. Not true. He did have a voice. I forget who did it.
Did he?
He did, yeah. And the line, my brother and I used to repeat it over and over again. We used to say, I'd like a beer, please. Because he said, he goes to a bar and he asks for a beer and it's just the saddest, like this augmented sunglasses wearing Matrix guy going into a bar and the way he asks is, I'd like a beer, please. It's just really sad.
He had the rudest head, didn't he? He just had this, like, it looked like a thumb with a face drawn on it. It was just so angular. And it was weird. He had big, he had, like, you could change the color of his skin and his hair.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I don't think I did. I don't think that added a lot for me. I want to say, did Deus Ex, Eidos? Who's the publisher? Who's the developer?
Oh, God, it's Eidos. It's one of those developers I know.
Eidos, yeah.
I've literally never said it out loud until now. So.
Eidos. So they did, am I misremembering, but did they do Anachronox? Who did Anachronox?
I'm sorry.
That was Ion Storm.
Wait, what's Anachronox?
Anachronox was, who did it? Was it John Romero? Hold on, I'm going to look it up right now. It was an RPG.
Yeah.
That was sort of its own. Yeah, that's it. So Ion Storm did Deus Ex. They did Anachronox.
Mm-hmm.
They did Daikatana. But Anachronox was this RPG, and it was a lot of fun, and it was so nuanced and interesting. But the art style was very similar, and that, like, at the time it blew me away. But to look at it now, it's like, yeah, exactly. It's just like everybody's like a chunky refrigerator carton with a face painted on the front.
Everyone looks like everyone basically looks like Papercraft. Like it's very blocky.
You could do Papercraft very easily with any of these games. Anachronox was a really cool game, which I remember very little of it now.
Yeah.
But it had a character. It was set in the future, but it had a character who had the most perfect sci-fi name I've ever heard in my life, and she was an assassin, and her name was Stiletto Anyway.
What?
Anyway was her last name. It's so good. Pulpy.
Other games I played. Okay, so another game I played that really had that aesthetic and that feel to it. Now, I played Flashback, which was that sort of...
Yeah.
like an amazing, basically the plot of, it's like Blade Runner meets Jason Bourne. You know, this guy wakes up with no memory, but he's got a little hollow box that tells him to get to a certain location, and you're running through the jungle, and it had these beautiful, I think it was rotoscoped, so they actually motion captured. It used that sort of early Prince of Persia style graphics. And it had this really great sci-fi plot. It had a very steampunk setting. It had, you know, the suburban sprawl and neon, and it was really great, but they did this sequel, and I can't remember what the sequel was called.
I think it was called Out of This World.
Really? Out of This World? Okay. Because Out of This World was like the most revolting 90s pixely graphics. And that same aesthetic.
Yes, that was it. I think I'm sorry. It's either Another World or Out of This World. I'm seeing it on Sega Genesis, Out of This World. Wait. I remember it. It was super – it was like 2D polygon.
Yeah.
It was like really chunky. I remember wanting to like – and Flashback, but I think it was way too difficult.
Flashback was amazing. Oh my god. But Flashback had what? What have you seen?
Oh, I'm looking at screenshots for Out of This World, and I'm seeing this black dog-like animal, and I'm remembering playing it, and it's this thing that's kind of like stalking you through the first level that can't be killed until you get to a certain circumstance, like it's that type of enemy.
Right.
And it created a terror in me. It's just that all those memories of being 9 years old and terrified of this beast have come rolling back.
Flashback had this, I remember at the end he went into like suspended animation, but the actual sequel wasn't Out of This World. It's a different game. The sequel to Flashback was Fade to Black. That's the one.
That's okay. Stylistically they're the same, but that is the correct sequel.
And it came out in 1995. So 92 was Flashback. 95. Oh, it was on. I think it was on the maybe the Saturn, but it was on a console as well. But basically, he thaws out, and there's these aliens and shapeshifters, and they made a remake of Flashback in the early 2000s, I think. But those games were great. But again, there were lots of games in that era that did have this kind of preoccupation with cyberpunk and with, you know, like around the Matrix era, everything was just like dark sunglasses and like, you know, that hacker aesthetic, that really kind of lame, like raver hacker aesthetic, which I sort of hate now, but looking back on it now, it's adorable, you know?
Yeah, it's that aesthetic gave rise to, I want to say that there is a, there's a parody in that aesthetic and the modern kind of done to death fedora, you know what I'm talking about?
Like, oh yeah, the Reddit thing. It's
yeah. There's something about I'm gonna go be the Matrix guy, and God, you know what? There's a direct through line. The red pill, the forum on Reddit for the MRA guys, all the men's rights stuff.
Oh, God.
It's straight across from the Matrix. It's just a Matrix reference. I always imagine it like a group of guys together, and one guy stands up and says, okay, we need to talk about something. What's the best movie ever made? And they all immediately go, The Matrix, obviously. What are you talking about? Yeah, of course it's The Matrix.
Well, here's the thing.
You talk about with the Keanu Reeves? Yeah, of course I'm talking about that. Matrix. I just asked you, what was the best movie?
And because here's the thing. I studied philosophy at university. I did first year philosophy, and I bailed when I realized that philosophy first year is basically when a lot of young, white, privileged males halt their critical thinking and reasoning process. So they get the first hit of easy-to-digest philosophy, and then they create this myopic worldview. So I feel like the Wachowski brothers, who are now the Wachowski brother and sister, amazing, you know, good on her, whatever. But like cinematically, I feel like they kind of went to a first-year philosophy course and then just started milking that dry. And after the first film...
Like, we got it.
Yeah, because the first film uses that milk to open doors. That's a weird image.
that's a lot of milk. I think that was in The Shining, but it was blood.
A lot of pressure, yeah. Just breastfeeding a skeleton and then... Anyway. So, essentially what happens is they open all these big moral doors, right? Which is it's very easy to open a door, Chris. It's very, very easy. It's much harder to close...
It's one of my favorite things to do.
It's so good, but you know what you have to do afterwards? You have to close the door. You have to put the toilet seat down. You have to... refasten the bread bag or the bread goes stale. So the problem with the Matrix films is they just keep opening doors, but because they haven't learned about more than the like three or four different philosophical quandaries, they start making their own ones up, which is sort of what the men's rights fedora-wearing a-hole movement is. It's like they've got this very small prism of knowledge and they try and apply it to every single facet of their lives. But the right. thing is, they stopped critically reasoning and developing that knowledge when they were in their early 20s.
Yeah.
And as we all know, when you're in your early 20s, you are, with all due respect, a little bit blinkered in terms of your worldview. Like, you don't actually know that much. The whole point of a reasoning mind is to keep developing and keep thinking. But, God, I hate men's
rights. No, I already got it all. First 3 weeks of class, I got it. No problem. I got just enough to get me in trouble.
And I got this cool hat. So, you know
and
what?
I got a good hat. I'm going to just walk out. That's fine.
The thing that really irks me about the men's rights movement, God, we're getting off topic, but it's the fact that the reason I get so angry about it is because there were times when I was a teenage boy, like I'm talking 15, where I did feel like women were kind of vending machines, where if I put in enough time and effort, then they would somehow owe me something. But that got really swiftly beaten out of me by people who I now love and respect. Like it, but maybe those people didn't have any, you know, any give. I'm kind of
glad that these admissions are snuggled deeply in this gaming podcast so that nobody can hear me admit to these things. But like, I was in the same boat in college. I very much believed in the like ladder theory and all this BS. And I thought, I'm a nice guy. Why don't girls like me? And I had a terrible crush on a girl in high school forever. And I was the type was like, I had a car at the time, and I'm like, I'll drive you here and there. I'll help you with your homework, blah, blah, blah. Believing that it would convert into romantic currency, which it does not. And it just amounted to me being too nervous to say, do you want to go out with me? I like you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Had she said no, I would have been able to get over it and said, all right, well, she doesn't want that. That's fine.
But the thing is, people, and especially you and me back in that age, like just horny and selfish. I think that's what it boils down to.
It's a bad combination.
It's a terrible combination. And if you don't move past it, you will end up a men's right activist. You will end up like being on the side of Gamergate, which is they're just the worst.
It's horrible.
It's just exhausting. Anyway, God, we have gotten spectacularly off topic. Okay.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying with us. Okay, so we were on how we don't like how J.C. Dunn looked, I guess. let's get back onto Invisible War because sure. I don't have that many fond memories of it. I remember very little. I know my brother played the hell out of it because he loved Deus Ex so much and he wanted the experience again. And I think he was a little bit disappointed with Invisible War. I don't even remember what major components there were. And in preparing for this show, I read that, or something I did not remember even, that is actually the latest game in the chronology of the Deus Ex world.
Yeah.
Because
Human Revolution is a prequel. It's a prequel.
Right, yeah. It actually, that one precedes even J.C. Dunn and all that.
Yeah, that's right.
So basically, the first in the series.
Which, see, that's why I love prequels. That's why I'm a big fan of like the Old Republic chronology in the Star Wars games. So if you do something a long time before the main story, you get to sort of have the best of both worlds. You get to tell new stories whilst also leading up to something that people already like, which of course didn't help the Star Wars prequels. But with Deus Ex, they couldn't set something after Invisible War because they'd effectively killed J.C. Denton in half of the endings. So now we get this new character who... See, I'm a really big fan of Human Revolution. I think it's an amazing game. The first couple of hours, I was really annoyed that it was sort of trying to, you know, milk the goodwill of the Deus Ex franchise. But after a while, there was this point... Okay, I'll tell you the point in Human Revolution where I really turned towards it. I was told to head up to Adam Jensen's apartment in that apartment block, and I sort of realized that the architecture in the elevator and in the foyer was pretty much taken straight from Blade Runner. It's taken from the Bradbury building, which is where Deckard lives. And you head into the apartment and this automated voice says, "Welcome back, Adam," or something to that effect. And this beautiful Vangelis-like music happens and the blinds open and this flock of birds flies past. And as the Venetians are casting light across the apartment, this filthy apartment, all the dust motes are hitting the beams of light, like classic film noir style. And these birds come past and I sort of went, oh God, this is my apartment. Oh God, where's the whiskey? And I just suddenly felt like a weary cyberpunk detective character and I felt so deeply embedded in this world. And then I realized that, oh, great, this game isn't just being Deus Ex. It's trying to do something new.
Right.
And I think I spent probably 20 minutes in my apartment picking up the boxes that were everywhere and then throwing them at walls until they got pulverized, because I wanted to clean the apartment. So I sort of tidied up and I read all of Jensen's books, and I went to the mirror and saw the post-it note and realized that, of course, he'd broken the mirror in a fit of rage because of the augments and losing his, you know, girlfriend. And it just seemed like a very lived-in world, which you couldn't do graphically or, you know, technologically with the other games. And that's fine. But I think that was the moment where I realized that Human Revolution was, like, the game for me. I've since played it, I think, 3 or 4 times. And that's something Invisible War never even tried to do. And I would argue they didn't really want to. I think they were just trying to. Is it cynical to say that they were trying to cash
in? I don't think so. I think it was, like I said, I think it was a game that came out around. I think the aesthetic is shared with Thief 3 because I think they came out around the same time. I don't know what was going on at Ion Storm, but it just felt kind of smashed together. And I did feel like maybe pivoting to console games was another thing that they were focusing on, but it made the regular gameplay suffer, which is weird because I mean I hate to say that like I'm some kind of a PC purist. I'm not. I play most of my stuff on a console now, but I don't know that you can develop the two. At the time, it might have been a new science, and that was the reason why it was kind of clunky.
Maybe. I'm actually looking at some screenshots for it now, just to try and get an idea of how good or bad it looked. You know, it looked okay.
No, it looked pretty good.
It looked pretty good. I'm even looking at screenshots of like of JC and Paul, and JC looks amazing. Like they've made him look human. He doesn't look like someone's scrawled a face on a padlock. He looks quite, you know, kind of handsome, but I don't know, that plot, I seem to recall the plot bumming me out. Maybe we should replay it. Maybe we should try and replay it and not be so cynical about the whole thing.
I may ask my brother to replay it and just report back to me since I don't have good memories of it. I think the thing that irritated me about it, maybe from a story construct perspective, was one of the very earliest things you discover in the game is that there are two... Okay, I'm remembering. I guess some stuff's coming back.
He's not like a Vietnam War vet having a flashback.
I'm having a Deus Ex 2 flashback. I didn't see my friends die face down in the Invisible War. One of the very first plot points is there are two competing coffee establishments. Do you remember this? One was called Queequeg, and the other one was called Pequod.
Oh my god.
Enormously jerk off references to Moby Dick because Starbucks, whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
And then you find out a little bit later, it's like they're both the same company. They're owned by the same company. So the idea of pitting people one against the other, saying, I'm a Queequeg guy, I only drink Pequod coffee, screw you. It's fake because the single corporation gains from both. And then you find out later that the two factions you're dealing with, they happen to be the same thing. And I just felt like it was really lazy, foreshadowing. It just was like, come on, guys, really? And plus, like, Pequod and Queequeg have Qs in them, and you guys couldn't pick a different name that didn't have... Okay.
I don't know. Look, see, now that you're describing that to me, that sounds mildly compelling, but it's all in the telling, I guess. By the way, it could have been.
It's an interesting way to come at it, but it was like I was being hit over the head with it.
I know.
It was not subtle.
It was not a subtle game. But there were 4 endings in this game, because I think there were 3 endings in the original Deus Ex. There were 4 in this one. So I'm looking it up now. There was the Helios post-human civilization. So you rescued Paul Denton. You uploaded this weird protocol to Paul and JC, and then you stepped into their infusion chamber. And then JC Denton's nanites, like his weird Helios nanites, were distributed to everyone on the planet. And then basically it's a new peaceful world governed, not ruled, by a benevolent, all-knowing AI. That's one ending.
Sure.
And then there was the Illuminati ending in which, I don't know, the Illuminati...
Nobody likes that one.
Well, if I skip that one. There was the Templar Holy War. So you leave Paul in stasis, give blood to Dr. Todd, upload the Aquinas Protocol to the Templars, and then... I think that's literally just... Okay, so the Illuminati and the Templars are the two factions vying for control, right? They're the Pequod and the Quaquigs and the Quiquos or whatever.
Quam.
Okay. But then there's the actual ending, which is called the Omar Nuclear Aftermath. So you kill all the faction leaders. You remember you had like a friend in your kind of like preppy...
Oh, that was what my... Yeah, that's how my brother played it. All the factions are like, hey, buddy, now that you got the secrets we need to take power, why don't you send it to us? And you did have the option to not send it to any of them.
Yeah, but to do that, you had to kill every leader. You couldn't just say no. You had to kill them. So you go up
right.
And you go to the previously reasonable characters like Paul and J.C. Denton, and then you have to kill them. And then the ending was there was a cutscene with like Earth that had just been totally nuked. And a narrator was like, after many years of conflict, Earth became a post-apocalyptic wasteland. But there's this one guy walking around, and I think it's you. I'm not sure. It was basically that was the bad ending. So it felt like, look, the game was a bag of shit, but IGN gave it a 9 out of 10, so I'm sort of a bit confused, and I feel like maybe we should play it again, but...
Maybe there may be some value in investigating it once more.
Here's a question for you. If you were in, let's say you're in a car accident, okay? I'm aware that I'm not a driver, I can't identify in any way with what this would feel like. I'm not into weird Cronenbergian crash fucking. I'm not a fan of that whole fetish. Remember the film Crash?
Yeah, sure. Who could forget it?
That horrible film by that horrible Canadian man about people who get off whilst having sex on like the wrecks of recently crashed cars.
I think those people might not be as bad as you say. Like, I'm trying to cover the fact that that's me. I wouldn't go so far as to say that it's a negative. I mean,
now,
it might be a good thing.
Let's not judge. I am a fan. Yeah. I am on that subreddit right now. And
have you tried it? Have you tried crashing a vehicle and then... No, okay. So anyway, yes, what about it?
See, I thought in my head, because I was like, how can you possibly, like, you know, put sex and car crashes together unless you remove the windscreen, right? Take all your clothes off, cover yourself in lube. Your partner does the same thing. You drive at each other at the same speed, and as you crash, you both fly through the air, legs akimbo, and then sort of just scissor each other once really hard.
No, you kind of grab each other by the backs of the arms, the shoulders, so you can lock in, and then you just kind of spin up into the air like a greasy helicopter.
That's what the move's called, actually. And then the greasy helicopter, of course, plummets to Earth. I was once doing a webcomic series called Lessons for Children, and I know exactly what panel got it cancelled. And it's this one. It was a crossover between the movie Crash and Phantom Menace. Would you like to hear how I managed to fuse those two?
I'm going to let you say it, but I think I have a good beat on it.
Do you really?
Is it pod race related?
No, it wasn't a pod race related. So,
darn it. Okay,
now,
go ahead.
When Jar Jar Binks is trying to describe the thing that got him kicked out of Gungan society, he says that he boomed the gasser. He's like, I boomed the gasser! So he refers to crashing a vehicle as booming the gasser.
So I see.
I took the movie poster from Cronenberg's film Crash, and then I put Jar Jar Binks in the driver's seat and wrote David Cronenberg's boomed a gasser. Now, is that in any way funny, or is it in fact two Venn diagram circles that will just never intersect?
I think that's a failed t-shirt.
Okay, I'll buy that. That's fine. That's a fair criticism.
Although I will say that it holds a certain charm for me because my brother and I often, not often, God, what if it was often, joked about what would Gungan sex be like. And it was just like, all right, Misa going to take my clothes off. And then they would just like break a wall down and go tumbling into the restaurant. And then, there'd be a food fight. And it'd just be the worst sex in the world.
Get your dick electrocuted. Misa going down on you now.
Right. It would just be like, it's just slapstick comedy. Nobody enjoys it. And you can't show it to kids either. So it's a total waste of time.
Exactly. Hey, now the question I was going to ask before I got disgustingly derailed was, if you were in a car crash and your employer somehow had like the rights to your body, right? So, you know, Adam's boss.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, that's sort of it's sort of a RoboCop-ish creation story.
It is a little bit, yeah. Story. So Mr. Sarif basically goes, because you actually get to see the part where he's on the table and they're like, hey, so this arm's still pretty good. He's like, remove it. And they basically augment him against his will. Hence Adam Jensen's catchphrase, I didn't ask for this. Or I never asked for this. So
I thought his catchphrase was, I punched a mirror. Stay away from me. I punched that mirror. Punch your mirror. Anyway, so my employer has the rights to my body.
Yeah, now I know. Look, I know you're self-employed, so technically this is you doing this to yourself.
I do have the rights to my body.
You can do whatever you want. But let's say you woke up and you had to choose one augment to wake up with. What would it be? And you can choose augments from classic Deus Ex, or you can choose something from the new games.
From classic Deus Ex, all I want is a beer, please. I think I would pick... I got to go with like a... can I just get the whole arm taken off? Because I used to fantasize about, you know what, it would be such a shame if I lost my arm in an accident. However, I would have a real good time designing the prosthetic. So how can I rob myself of the opportunity?
Wait, design your own arm?
Yeah. Oh, I think, I mean, okay, so Human Revolution, it's the game I played the least. And, although I saw the trailer for Mankind Divided and it looks awesome. Mm. One of the things I really like about that game, about that franchise, is the design sensibility, like you mentioned, and also the plot. Like, the story is fascinating. The idea that it's like, augments are great. Why don't we all have them? Okay, let's try them out. And then, oh, well, the drug that makes you not reject them is in short supply.
That's what, right, are we gonna neuropazine. Do? So you basically have this situation where they... Yeah, it sort of is like a pharmaceutical... you know, jip, and then they create these. What happens at the end? I think that people's.
I don't remember.
That's right. So they basically upgrade everyone's firmware so that everybody has to get implanted with this new. They have to basically install a new patch. But once they've done that, they're basically under the control of the people who sell the. Organs.
That's right. That's
I think,
right. Yeah.
I think that's how it goes.
It sounds right.
Yeah. So you actually get a choice, and this isn't a quest marker or anything, but you, as Jensen, can either choose to go and update your firmware or not. And I don't know if that affects the plot in any way, but every time that happens, I get this weird. The first time I played it, I had this weird feeling of like, probably shouldn't install that. That seems a little dodgy. I don't trust these people. And as a result,
looks good though. I like it.
Yeah. Well, it's not. You know, you get a nice new HUD and whatnot. But yeah, if, I guess. Okay, so you want to have like a new funky robot arm?
That, yeah, all that said, I will distill that into my answer, which is I want that robot arm, and I do want it specifically from Human Revolution. I think that sort of that ceramic blade that comes out, what a great design idea.
So beautiful, isn't it? It's like, yeah. Those, the aesthetic of those augments were just absolutely beautiful. My favorite was, look, in terms of absolute practicality, it's probably the one that restores your health over time. Because let's be honest.
That makes sense.
Let's say so you fall from a building, you fracture your leg, and then it just sort of just tops you up. That, in terms of practicality, that's probably the one I would go with. But if I was going for just sheer cool factor, the cloaking device. You know, you could just sort of...
Yeah.
So cool.
That was cool. I remember that is one of the things I went for as soon as I could in Human Revolution. Just because that fits my play style. I want to be that sneaky thief.
Yeah, yeah.
Not skilled enough to run in the front door and shoot a bunch of holes in people.
When are you ever going to do that, though? So you basically want the augments that would be applied to a high-tech military espionage guy. But what do you in your everyday life actually need? Think about it.
Oh, what will I need? Okay.
Yeah.
Gosh, I guess my vision is very important. Yeah, I mean, anything. How often have I dreamed? I just want to be able to look at something from far away and just strain, and then it just goes, and I just zoom in like 20 times.
Oh, like an instantaneous zoom feature. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's a value. I could really get those pixels lined up real clean and tight if I had something like that. what would you have? Besides the health.
Okay, honestly, I think it would be the social interaction augment. You know, the one where you actually get to kind of, I think like Jensen literally can bring their pheromones up on a HUD and just kind of see where the conversation is going. Because can you imagine how easy it would be to, because I have to occasionally interview people that I have quite a level of admiration for. A couple of years back, I interviewed Gillian Anderson, and we're sitting there in this hotel room together. Like literally, they ushered everyone else out of this room, and it's me and Gillian Anderson, goddamn Agent Scully, sitting in this hotel room, and she's sitting across from me, and I am so nervous. And if at that point I could sort of just like pick up the little eddies and currents in the air of what she was feeling and thinking, that conversation would have gone significantly better than it did. But here's what actually happened. We asked a few questions and I was quite charming and she was really flirty and lovely and friendly and I was nailing it. And then I did what I would never have done if I'd had this goddamn augment, and I told her about a dream I had about her when I was 15. Which is just, yeah, so I started like this. So I'm like, hey, can I ask you a kind of a strange question? And she's like, okay. And I said, so I had this dream about you when I was a teenager. And you could hear her anus snapshot. Like, you could see her visibly clenching and almost going for the door. But God bless her, she's a professional. So she went, all right, go on. Turns out the dream was totally innocuous. Like, it was literally just about her and me on a ski lift having this lovely conversation when I was a teenager. Because I used to have real issues with night terrors. I used to wake up in the night from really bad nightmares. And I had this lovely dream where I'm on this ski lift above the streets of Vienna and I looked across and there's Agent Scully and she touches my hand and says, don't be afraid. And I'm like, okay. And then I woke up and I said, thanks to you and that dream about you, I was never scared of horror films anymore. You literally stepped into my subconscious and sort of like slapped me awake. And she sort of visibly relaxed and went, okay, cool, great dream, great. And then we got a photo together, because I think what she thought was I was going to go, so we're in this dungeon and you are lubed to the hilt, and then she would have to call for security. But if I
right, but and I let's find a way to make that happen. I don't know if that's part of a regular interview type of a thing that you do, but you would make 15-year-old me very happy.
Do you have any lube? Is that on your rider? Is that, can we get that in here? But here's the thing.
You know what? I'll run across the street.
You know what? Like, nope. I'll tell you what, Scully, you wait here and I will just rappel down the building. And oh yeah, we're on the 50th floor. I was so ashamed mid-interview that I could have comfortably jumped out. But here's the thing. That social interaction augment would rob me of those thrilling moments where I actually have to coast by the seat of my pants. You know, that was kind of exciting to do that, to, you know, go in solely on instinct.
Yeah, that's true. The fear of a moment like that. I mean, as much as I hate to be nervous before I perform or before I do anything like that, I think it might help me remember it better. It may help me mark it better. You just have to deal with that feeling as it comes, because I don't know a single person who is not nervous before they have to do something big like that. There's the interviewer who is not nervous, I think, is maybe an asshole.
Maybe. Or they're cocky.
It's possible.
It's possible. But listen, were you nervous before we did the Symphony of Legends gig? Because there were like 5,000 people.
Very
there.
Nervous.
Really?
That was the biggest crowd I've ever addressed. I was incredibly nervous, but I'm very good at hiding it. I become very withdrawn and reserved.
And cold and dead inside. Yeah.
That's right. So you were kind of jumping up and down. I was like, I need to go find, I need to become sloth-like. I need some eucalyptus leaves. But right before the moment we go on, otherwise I can't hack it. I cannot get in that space.
I saw you. You also took a while to thaw out after that. You weren't relaxed straight away. We had to go and find you a drifter. You had to kill them just to feel something, you know?
Right. And it was safe, though. I mean, thank God there's so many of them around there.
I'm so glad we hid that body, though. That was just...
It's one of the best things. One of the best things about Deus Ex 2 is the ability to hide bodies, to tie it back in. I remember that being very impressive. To be able to drag a body somewhere, which is also a hallmark of the Thief series. And I wonder if they just borrowed that straight across. But, man, that was such a treat. I'm going to knock this guy out on patrol, drag him into a vent. And then everybody else is like, yeah, it's fine. I guess he's on the other part of the patrol.
There's always that weird bit where somebody's leg kind of goes at that like that crazy 180-degree angle just to their head. And you're dragging them in. And I'm like, if only you could do that in real life, you might not be in this situation, you know?
I was imagining the I think Deus Ex did not have any kind of ragdoll physics in it. So, I mean, it was just a form that you pick up, and then when you put it back down somewhere else, it's just the same dead body form that lands. But in Invisible War, it was the ragdoll. So there was a lot of like, I need to move the body over here, and then the leg would like occlude a banister or something like that, and the body part would just go and just wiggle against the wall forever. Yeah,
they had that happen in occasionally in Skyrim when you would like fast travel to a town where you killed a dragon in the town square. You would be standing there for a few seconds, and villagers would be walking around, and then suddenly the entire skeleton of the dragon you killed would spew forth from the earth whilst twitching aggressively, and I would literally scream, and no one would react. It was like my character just inhaled a bunch of ketamine. It was absolutely horrifying. I love ragdoll physics. It's a truly...
More ragdoll physics, everybody. If any developers are listening to this program, more ragdoll physics is what the world needs.
Please, 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 please feel free to go across to the iTunes store and give us a star rating and a review. I know it sounds annoying, but it's really quick to do. And what it does is it actually pushes us up into people's cone of vision, right?
So
If you think of the iTunes store as a patrolling guard in Deus Ex, and you are Adam Jensen, what you actually want to do is grab that guy's attention and just create as much chaos as possible for us. So please give us a review, even if it's just a real quick one. Give us a star rating. If you like the podcast, tell your friends, head across to our website, which is 28playslater.chainsawsuit.com. And we have a Twitter account, which is at 28plays. So, yeah.
I think that pretty well covers it. And by the way, don't be afraid to mention this podcast to your dad or your mom. We're looking for parents, guys. This is one of the best podcasts for a busy dad to listen to on his drive time to work. So that's enjoyable.
It's real good for those mums and dads. My dad listened to the last episode. He said, "What was that about?" And I was like, "I don't know, japes, whatnot." And he enjoyed it. He enjoyed the sounds and the colors and shapes it put into his into his man head. So, you know, yeah, it's a pure sensory overload for adults. It's like when a dog puts their head out the car and they open their tongue, all the rush of chemicals in the air, it's like drugs for a dog.